Blog Talk Radio.
I want to be free. I want you to be free. I want us to be a self-governing people, not asking, having to ask a white man or anybody for anything. All normal, healthy human beings want to be self-governing and self-determining. I want to have a black power. I want to have a black government. When I say black power, I'm talking about black freedom. I'm talking about big lip freedom. I'm talking about broad nose freedom. I'm talking about nappy hair freedom. I'm talking about boombox on your shoulder freedom. I'm talking about black freedom, freedom on our own terms. I'm saying that we don't have to act like nobody else in order to be free.
You're listening to Our Common Ground.
And we welcome you to Our Common Ground this Saturday evening in March. It's the 26th, and this is Our Common Ground. Thank you so very much for being with us here at Our Common Ground. We are Alternative Activists Empowerment Talk Radio, and we are here with purpose. Tonight, my co-host, Alpha, and I will be talking about a number of issues. Well, we'll be examining a number of issues, and we're going to allow others to talk about them. Good evening, Alpha. How are you this evening? A very powerful show today at the Alpha Show on Truthworks Network.
Well, thank you, Janice. I'm doing just well. I'm here. I barely got here. Better late than never, but I'm here.
Well, you got here just on time. And for those of you who are listening, you can join us in this discussion. Our number is 347-838-9852. You might want to write that down. And you can also join our chatters at blogtalkradio.com/OCG, because there is a lot of information that we're going to cover tonight. You know, Alpha, one of the things is that in tonight's show that I'm really grateful for, and it is that many times as we look at the day's events, as we look at what has happened, I mean, in this country right now, people who are aware, we're looking at issues day to day. There's day play every day. And no matter what the issues, the major issues of the day, whether it's political, whether it's governmental, whether it's social, whether it's cultural, it has just a huge landscape for people to have to think through, examine, explore, understand. And many people in our community, and that's why I have said that tonight it is time for us to examine our black selves. How are we responding to the issues of the economy, the politics that's going on in this country, the racial terrorism, the cultural annihilation, the electoral elimination of a black voice, a black vote. And many people are just so confused, and they find it very difficult to explain. So tonight what we have done is we have put together the voices of some very powerful black liberation warriors that have articulated these issues in the context of our black selves. And that's what we're going to be doing tonight, and we're hoping that our audience will join us with their response both to the issues and help us expand our and frame our definition of some of these issues. Like, I think that black people have been involved in various forms of economic oppression, but we now are seeing coming before us like a tsunami, economic terrorism, where our community is the target. I mean, we're not the only target, but we are a target. And one of the things that occurred to me, and our audience may be able to hone in on this and give us some feedback, some discussion about it. I'm sure that the voices that we present tonight will also be able to give us some feedback on it, is that we have always known that our government, that politicians lie to us, that they keep secrets, that they have backroom dealings, that lobbying plays a major role in how public policy unfolds. But the dirty dealings, it's one thing. I was having a discussion just a couple of days ago, I think it was Thursday, with Dr. Nathan Hare, one of our great black liberation expositors. And Nathan was saying that they've been given a ticket, that at one point there was some gentleman's agreement that secrets, dirty dealings, lobbying, the whole nine yards would be kept in the black room. And his feeling was, his explanation of the explosion of economic terrorism, political terrorism, racial terrorism, cultural annihilation, and electoral elimination really is being put out front. It's being thrown at us. We see it every day. It's exposed, and they don't care that it's exposed because they have a basis for this ugly, nasty, dirty public discourse. And their excuse and their basis and what gives them ream in their spine is America's fear that somehow a black president got by and they weren't expecting it. And this is the response.
Well, Janice, let me say this. Along with their fears, and they are fears, there seems to be a huge disappointment amongst that ilk that the powers that be allowed this black man to get past. And instead of feeling or taking their anger out on this shadow operatives, the shadow government that actually runs things, they are simply willing to, they've been spun to turn their anger on the president himself. And but my whole, you know, Janice, my entire message is this. Don't stand there and just become the piñata. Don't get beat with those sticks on a daily basis. You know, when people courted George Bush, he got snarly. He got nasty and contentious in public. When you courted Dick Cheney, he stood up and dared you, just like he beat down Wolf Blitzer on CNN. You know, this is, you know, I get to a point where I'm
tired. I know, sigh and frustration. I know. And I think that that's exactly what I was saying, that I think people are having a difficult time People are having a difficult time articulating this. For those of you who have just joined us, you're tuned in to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and Alpho of the Alpho Show is my host tonight. We're going to get started, and we're going to be listening to, and we'll take your calls at 347-838-9852. You might want to write that down. 347-838-9852. We're going to be listening to the voices, people who have really given us the lessons. And they rang somewhat hollow because we weren't seeing it. We weren't seeing and understanding what these people were talking about when they talked about economic terrorism, political terrorism, racial terrorism, cultural annihilation, and electoral elimination. We're going to get started, and thank you so much for being with us.
I want to be free. I want you to be free. I want us to be a self-governing people, not actually having to ask the white man or anybody for anything. All normal, healthy human beings want to be self-governing and self-determining. I want to have a black power. I want to have a black government. When I say black power, I'm talking about
Ambassador Peck on an interview yesterday. Did anybody else see him or hear him? He was on Fox News. This is a white man, and he was upsetting the Fox News commentators to no end. He pointed out, you see him, John? White man. He pointed out an ambassador, that what Malcolm X said when he got silenced by Elijah Muhammad was in fact true. America's chickens are coming home to roost. We took this country by terror away from the Sioux, the Apache, the Arawak, the Comanche, the Arapaho, the Navajo. Terrorism. We took Africans from their country to build our way of ease and kept them enslaved and living in fear. Terrorism. We bombed Grenada and killed innocent civilians, babies, non-military personnel. We bombed the black civilian community of Panama with stealth bombers and killed unarmed teenagers and toddlers, pregnant mothers and hard-working fathers. We bombed Gaddafi's home and killed his child. Blessed are they who bash your children's head against a rock. We bombed Iraq. We killed unarmed civilians trying to make a living. We bombed a plant in Sudan to pay back for the attack on our embassy, killed hundreds of hard-working people, mothers and fathers who left home to go that day not knowing that they never get back home. We bombed Hiroshima, we bombed Nagasaki, and we nuked far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon, and we never batted an eye. Kids playing in the playground, mothers picking up children after school, civilians, not soldiers, people just trying to make it day by day. We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back into our own front yard. America's chickens are coming home to roost. Violence begets violence. Hatred begets hatred. And terrorism begets terrorism. A white ambassador said that, y'all, not a black militant. Not a reverend who preaches about racism. An ambassador whose eyes are wide open and who's trying to get us to wake up and move away from this dangerous precipice upon which we are now poised. The ambassador said the people that we are wounded don't have the military capability we have, but they do have individuals who are willing to die and to take thousands with them, and we need to come to grips with that. What should our response be right now?
Boom, Economic terrorism, political terrorism, racial terrorism, cultural annihilation, electoral elimination. Time for self-examination. Lessons for Black liberation. What should our response be? Liberation lessons from the masters on Our Common Ground tonight. And your response. This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham with my co-host Alpha of The Alpha Show. I'll be listening for you.
And this is how it's going to go tonight, folks. And once again, thank you so much for being with us here at Our Common Ground. I've been thinking, and it's been running in my head, Alpha, all week, that what we do need to do is we need to formulate our own response independent of how others are handling it. And we have had Black liberation expositors. We've had Malcolm, we've had Marcus Garvey, we've had Ida B. Wells, we've had Sojourner Truth, we've had just mounds and mounds of people who have from their experience articulated and tried to make clear and to try to remove the confusion from us about what it means to be Black and what our response, our Black selves' response should be to what happens in this country from the government, from politicians, from people who, from the corporations and moneyed power in this country, and we still seem not to be able to formulate what is an effective, self-contained, consistent response to all of this. So what we're going to do is we're going to visit some of those voices. And the first voice that you will hear is Brother Amali Yeshitela. He is the leader of the Uhuru movement. He's the chairman and founder of the African People's Socialist Party. He's the leader of the African Socialist International and founder of the Burning Spear newspaper, which is the oldest Black power newspaper in continuous publication since the 1960s. He's fiery, he's uncompromising, and he is courageous as a leader of the movement for a liberated Africa. He has struggled for Black freedom for over 40 years. And one of the reasons I wanted to introduce you to him tonight is that we are going to have him on Our Common Ground. But until you, it's almost like beginning to study Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who you've already heard tonight, beginning to understand and know where Dr. Amos Wilson is coming from, or Dr. Joy DeGruy, where she's coming from, or where Dr. Naeem Akbar is coming from out of their experience. So before we bring him live and you talk to him, we wanted to be able to introduce him to you. And one of the things that I love about this brother, he's very clear. He's a Black socialist. And that means that his socialism, his political socialism, is steeped in to the fundamental question of Black liberation. And let's we'll take your calls, write the number down, because in between these clips from these liberation warriors, if you want to make a comment, if you have some thoughts about what they have said and what it means in terms of where we are in this country, then you we'll take your call. But it's only in response to what you have heard. So I it is with my pleasure, my dear, dear warrior brother, Amali Yeshitela of the Uhuru movement. And I am just so pleased to be able to get his guidance for our audience tonight.
With a crisis like this, people lose faith in the established system. They lose faith in the system. They lose faith in Bush. They lose faith in the Republican Party. They lose faith in the Democratic Party. They lose faith in the presidency and the United States Congress itself. And they begin to look for alternatives. They begin to be open to the ability that we can join something else, that we can participate in something else to control and change our lives and to build for a better future. That means they're capable of listening to what we have to say about what it takes to build a different world. You can't build the world based on injustice, based on slavery, and expect it to work right. And so some people open up, opening to that possibility. You go to any college campus, you see all these young people on the campuses who were thinking about revolution, but overturned the whole system, recognized that something was rotten with the system. And then here comes Barack Obama. So you got Africans who are losing their homes. Believe me, it's happening already. You look at most of the major cities where Africans are located and look at the pattern of foreclosure, you will see that it's Africans who are losing their homes and by the thousands. And so you find Africans now who were open to the question of revolution, and here comes Barack Obama. Here comes Hillary Clinton. And many people who I've known or known of, I see them now talking about how Barack represents the possibility of the future. They say Obama means that it's possible that the race issue is no longer a significant issue in America anymore. I've seen that. I've seen this by nationalists, pan-Africanist nationalists, who are raising this question. They're saying that Obama proves maybe the race question is no longer a primary factor in American life anymore. That's what they're saying. And then Obama went and won New Hampshire primary. Iowa, thank you. Iowa primary. Won the Iowa primary. And then was leading in the polls going into New Hampshire. Lost New Hampshire. People said, what happened? They still haven't explained what happened in New Hampshire. They still haven't explained what happened in New Hampshire. All the polls said he was going to win in New Hampshire, but he lost in New Hampshire. And then, of course, he won big just now in South Carolina. What in the hell is going on? People are talking about Barack Obama in the newspapers. They're talking about him. They're holding him up as this great example. He represents hope and change. That's what they're saying. Isn't that what they're saying? And hope and change. And but the primary thing about Barack Obama is that he hasn't said the word black out of his mouth, not even to talk about the color of his suit or his shoes. He cannot address the question of African people, the suffering of our people. He cannot say a single word about the condition of African people. He can't say, look at what the subprime mortgage industry is doing to Africans in this country. He can't say what's happening to us at all. Because if he does, it means the white people won't vote for him. But guess what? Let's go back. He won in Iowa. Everybody said, wow, Iowa's white. And he won in Iowa. And it looks like he's going to lose in New Hampshire. Win in New Hampshire. But the difference is this. The Iowa caucus is open. That is to say, when you go to Iowa in the caucus, that the different contenders have representatives at the meeting. So whoever's for Obama is over here, whoever is for Edwards is over here, whoever's for Clinton is over here, et cetera, et cetera. And if your guy doesn't get everything, then you might go over and support another candidate. If it's strategically, you go over there to support him. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's public. It's open. But New Hampshire was closed. And the white people who said they were going to vote for Obama didn't do it. And they said they were going to vote for him because they couldn't. There was no good reason they shouldn't vote for him. If you're going to vote for a lickspittle bootlicking servant of capitalism, Obama was the best lickspittle you could have. So why not vote for Obama? Except you got something against black people. And so they couldn't say, I got something against black people, therefore I'm not going to vote for Obama. They said, I'm going to vote for him. And then time they got behind the curtain, They did what white folk often do, right? They voted for white people, just like they often do. And then, but he goes to South Carolina. He went big in South Carolina. He went so big, it's amazing. So they say, what happened? Because it wasn't too long ago that most of the Africans who they polled in South Carolina said they were going to vote for Clinton. But what happened? What happened was when he won in Iowa and came in second in New Hampshire, many of the Negroes who were going to vote for Clinton thought he had a chance to win. They actually said, he can win. So all of them went, 80% of the Africans in South Carolina voted for Obama. But only 25% of the white people in South Carolina voted for Obama. And so even they're talking about race doesn't make a difference. Something made a damn difference, you know. 80% of the Africans voted for Obama, and 75% voted against him. 76%. Actually, he got 24% of the white vote. And 76% split their vote up between the other white people who were running for office. So he didn't do as good as they would have you think he did in terms of proving that race is no longer a factor in this country. Now, Obama's got a lot of money behind him. And in fact, in the first quarter of this process, he raised more money than Clinton did, which was extraordinary. So the question is, why does Obama get this kind of support? Well, there are a couple of reasons for it. One is because Obama is somebody that America needs right now, white America. Because for one reason, he is a symbol of what every Negro should be. Somebody who doesn't rock the boat, doesn't say anything about black people in the political life, ain't got nothing to say about, nothing said, nothing about black people, except I can't help because I'm black. Or something to that effect. Or it doesn't matter if I'm black. But it ought to be the most goddamn important thing in your life that you're black. You understand? But he is like race and color neutral. He's like Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Now, these are somebody that all the white people in the world can love them because they don't say nothing that would shake them up about black people and the condition of our folk. And so they need that now. They need an Obama to become a template, to create a template for how Africans should act, how people should act in pursuing political objectives. He is a noble Negro. He's like Mandela. Nothing upsets him. You know, no matter what has happened, he's not upset about it. And that's how all of you should act. Stop acting upset. Be like Obama. If you come down here with a demonstration at Bowles, Obama would never do that. You understand? And so anything that acts different from Obama is extremist. So that's really important for him to become this template. One of the most important tasks of Obama, and I'm not talking about he volunteered, say, look, boss, this is what I'm going to do. I'm saying this is why the white folk give them the money to make it possible. I'm saying that when you talk about a presidential election where they're going to spend more than $1 billion, right, in this election, it's not something like your neighborhood guy can run for office. Somebody with a whole bunch of money is, a lot of folks, a whole bunch of money is promoting him and projecting him for their own reason. Not because of you, but because of them. Not because of what's important to Africans, but because of what's important to this element of the ruling class. So, he's important because at this time of crisis, where you might be looking for revolution, where you might be willing to talk about overturning the system, he brings Africans back into the safe embrace of the Democratic Party.
And there you have. Brother Omali Yeshitela, leader of the Uhuru movement, talking about the politics which simply has brought us to the first African-American president without significant change.
Well, Dennis.
Alva?
In listening to that clip, I'll say this. The brother was, he was speaking about his concerns of what he would like for our community and what he would like this African-American president to say. And we both know that he is not the quintessential African-American who has had the black experience in this country. So therefore, why would he? Why would you expect him to? I would hope that the one thing that this president has done was change a mindset among the young people that they can achieve. No, racism hasn't been leveled or erased or any of the above. Matter of fact, it has increased. It has intensified. They have taken liberty to be bigoted. They have taken exceptional steps to be over the top with the dog whistle of racism. But I found it rather interesting that he would settle in on such a vitriolic criticism of this president, not saying black one time. And, you know, black folks.
Well, I think part of it is that he is trying to bring people to the place where the expectation is that this president is not going to be more or less than he is. And his response to the black agenda or to some black agendas is going to be just what it is. Our number is 347-838-9852. We'd like to get your thoughts and your response to the Black Liberation Warriors who we are listening to tonight. And we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls or move on to our next lesson. You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and Alpha is my co-host.
We're talking about black freedom, freedom on our own. I'm saying that we don't have to act like nobody else in order to be free.
You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Thank you for being with us here tonight. I'm Janice Graham. We'll be right back. Hi out there, this is Janice Graham of Our Common Ground. Want to remind you of some of the terrific broadcast shows available to all you talkers. The India Declare Show, Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. and Saturday at 11 a.m. The Alpha Show, every Saturday, 3 p.m. And following that 3 p.m. broadcast, he's at TruthWorks Network at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And don't forget of all the audio documentary being provided at TruthWorks Network here at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and I'm sure me and my friends will be listening for you.
You can't, you know, I've often said you can't hear what you don't understand. So the whole focus, my whole purpose in doing all of it was to begin to look at what can we do to improve, to heal, to provide, I guess, tools for the future generation so that we don't continue to remain injured and re-injure ourselves and each other with our trauma. So my goal and my focus right now is really on the healing.
And once again, thank you for being here at Our Common Ground. Our number is 347-838-9852. We're visiting the voices of Black liberation lessons that have been taught, but perhaps not learned, not integrated into how we are responding to the current events of the day. And we're suggesting here at Our Common Ground that it's time for self-examinations and that we need to look at some of these lessons. Our number, 347-838-9852, and we're so happy to have you with us. If you'd like to join our chatters, Navaksar and Khalifa, Doc Don, Mystic, Jarayana, and House Music Lover, and BK Gowire, and YJ. They're all in our chat room, and they will welcome you at blogtalkradio.com/OCG. You know, one of the things, Alpha, I understand that I understand how, but the whole issue of how we respond to our African-American president, what we expect of him, and we have such great expectations, we have such disappointment and such frustration, I thought that it was very important to hear Brother Yeshua Tella of the Uhuru movement talk about, and that was before he was elected. So that, I think that is also important. So your point, I think, is well taken. And there may be people in our audience who would like to speak to your point or speak to the expression and articulation of suspicion. I mean, we're always talking about the president, whoever sits in the presidency, is really not the person. I mean, I don't understand why we think that here is a man who raised, how much money did he say he raised? $15 million?
Well, Dennis, the man could have raised, and he could have gotten all the money in the world to run for president. And the only thing I expect out of him is not simply questioning whether or not he addresses a black agenda. He can address a black agenda by addressing the policemen on the street that oversee our Environmental Protection Agency, the policemen on the street that oversee our financial institutions and the SEC. He can address our concerns by simply following and making sure that the laws that are on the books and the programs that are available carried out in a fair and honest way. And even as president, none of this has happened. And that is one of the biggest, that is one of my, you know, I'm not looking for him to address black issues, just the black issues, why black people are
losing.
Well,
the thing is, but the point here is how this president is, what our response is, black people ought to be to him. And our general responses, you're absolutely right. But I'm pretty adamant that in our specific response, those things that affect us more, you know, I'm unsure what I think that we are unsure what all of this means to us, but if some people are getting floods, we're getting a tsunami, and we have to have a response that is separate, that is distinct to where we stand. Let's listen to Brother O'Malley talk about economics.
a situation where, again, you can't just have, they said this is the worst, they said like last year, something like 26% decrease in new housing starts. They said it's the largest in history. So you got people who can't buy new houses, people who losing houses they already got, etc., people who can't afford to live in houses, right? So what happens? Okay, you, the construction industry is a real serious part of the economic force in this country. But if they are not building houses, ask Kitty, what happens? If they're not building houses, that means that people, they cut back on building, don't they? If they fire people, they lay people off. So thousands of people will lose their job who would otherwise be working in the construction industry. If they lose their jobs, which means that many of them are also going to lose their houses, right? But it also means that they can't buy the car they expected to buy. They can't replace the refrigerator that they were planning to do because they're having problems with it. It means that, therefore, the auto industry has to cut back. If the auto industry cuts back and the people who make refrigerators and stoves and the rest of them, they cut back also, that means they lay people off. If they lay people off, then the people who got laid off, they can't buy new clothes. They can't for the children that they plan to get, et cetera, et cetera. So that hits the industry that's you know, retail industry, et cetera. So then they lay off. Sears, I understand, is fighting for its very life right now. Sears is almost down the drain. So if they lay people off, right, that means, you know, the things that those people would be buying, they can't. So this thing reverberates throughout the entire economy. You got a meltdown that's happening here. And so you should really, really, really be aware of it. And I'm not sure where it's going and all of the implications that there are for it. But I was saying, ask Kitty, because what I'm saying is because since they ain't buying houses and et cetera, that means they ain't buying furniture. That means that they ain't giving up furniture that they would have given up because they were going to get some, you know, some new furniture with their new house. That means that we get hurt badly over there on Central Avenue. Some people say, oh man, it's going to be a political loss. Who? And ain't nobody, everybody holding their ass. Nobody got time to be talking about, oh, look at the Uhuru movement. Because the reality is that you should have gave us your furniture because it's going to be out there on the streets after a while. You understand? that's the objective reality that people are confronted with in this country right now. And even as all of this is happening, which leads to other kinds of contradictions. It leads to contradictions of deeper poverty and a deeper scramble for resources that are not there in our communities in particular, who has been so badly hit. It means more police violence and things like that. And then there's Barack Obama. It means the U.S. has to use whatever means it can to secure resources around the world. It means it has to engage in an escalated struggle against China and the European Union and other forces out there, right? And there's Barack Obama. That's a serious contradiction that we are confronted with, because they are going to have to do terrible things to African people. They already are doing terrible things to African people. And Barack Obama doesn't have a program any better than Hillary Clinton's when they're dealing with the mortgage situation, the sub, and he won't even say that something is happening to African people here. Nobody will say anything about it. That's why Africans ourselves are not aware that this is something that's specializing in attacking us, because nobody will talk about the implication. Nobody would say, look, this is the summation. Look where people are losing their homes. Look where it's happening at, right? That's a serious problem that we are confronted with. And a greater problem is that people do not understand the nature of the system itself. And that people looking at Barack Obama because he looks like us, etc., and assuming that somehow this is a great thing, all these people voted for Barack Obama. Barack Obama raised more than $100 million. $100 million. Hillary Clinton, $100 million. Who gave him $100 million? And I want to tell you that they worked for the ones who gave him $100 million. And their campaign, their program is for the ones who gave him $100 million. And because you can be inspired by Barack Obama, because he's a smart Negro. He's the smartest person out there running. Listen to him talk. He talks more shit than a radio station. Doesn't he? He speaks much better than every candidate that's out there. Y'all got a flair for that kind of stuff. So it's easy to get caught. Wow. And you feel pride because, oh, wow, you know, white people are supposed to be so smart, but look at Barack. Right? But you don't understand the system. Because Barack is working for the same people that Hillary is working for, that McCain is working for, that Huck, whatever his name is working for. Because the state is an oppressive organization. It is an organization of coercion. It is like the prison system, the courts, the jail, the military, all those forces constitute what you call state power. And in the middle of the discussion, when we brought up Obama and the fact that because of the existence of this state of the bourgeoisie, of white power imperialism, it didn't matter who got elected. And then somebody said, well, yeah, but, and you know, look at Obama's history because he doesn't have a history of this and that. I don't care if Obama had a history of being the most militant member of the Black Panther Party, who was also secretly advisor to Elijah Muhammad at the height of the influence of the Nation of Islam. The reality is, if he became president of the United States, he would be subservient to the white imperialist bourgeois state. It doesn't matter what his history is. What you need to know is about the history of the state as an institution that exists in human society. You know that, then you know whoever's in charge, whoever is supposedly in charge there, is subservient to that institution. And I have to say this because it's getting really interesting.
Well, Alpha, I have to say this. He raises some interesting questions as to our bifurcated way in which we look at politics and government. He's essentially saying that in our community, we have decided to have double standards, that somehow the criterion that we use to examine George Bush, the criterion we use to examine Clinton, Bill Clinton, should be different than the criterion that we use to examine Barack Obama. For instance, let me give you one example. We have somehow nullified our questioning of how much money was given to Barack Obama in his campaign by Goldman Sachs. And the kind of support as a corporation that Goldman Sachs got to be reconfigured and to be financed to be viable. Would you say that that analysis is not true?
Well, the amount of money he received from Goldman Sachs and other corporate donors simply shows me that the corporations were betting on the hottest candidate.
And that is exactly the explanation that the Chamber of Commerce would give you.
Well, the Chamber of Commerce the Chamber of Commerce is a different animal. They have been co-opted, not like as if they weren't before. But with the way George Bush destroyed this country, that was a tsunami moment. They would never
I'm simply raising the issue of how we measure the effectiveness of politicians in addressing the problems that we have in this country. Do you agree? For instance, I think that the kind of economic terrorism that was played through George Bush, the Bush administration, has certainly escalated in the Obama, under the Obama administration. I mean, and when I say economic terrorism, I'm talking about the idea that I heard you talking on your show this week and last week, and you were talking about it's not a tax problem, it's a revenue problem. But we gave, as a compromise, this president compromised for tax cuts for the wealthiest people in this country. Today, give us that list that you were, I love that list you were giving today on your show about what corporations pay and what their tax levy is.
Well, you
had a whole list.
Well, see, that particular list, and that's just the short list. And I call it the short list because of this. That's the short list. Those are the people who were funding the Win America think tank. Those are just the corporations who were funding this particular think tank, and the amount of taxes that they were paying, which was, I mean, it was a drop in the bucket. The highest tax rate was I think Oracle. And it was in the vicinity of something like 27%. Everybody else is paying. I mean, 35% is what they're screaming that they have to pay, but no one is paying it. And those were just the Win America, the think tank that is going after a particular. Or they're lobbying for a particular study, a particular group, and I'm trying to pull it up because it's very interesting that this one particular think tank is being financed and funded by corporations that aren't paying their fair share of taxes. The Win America is the name of the corporation, and Win America has been campaigning for a tax holiday. But,
you know, the thing is, our anger is not consistent. Our frustration, and as I said when we came on the air, what we're trying to do is formulate some kind of response that makes sense for us, a response to the Republican Party, a response to the tea baggers, a response to what the Supreme Court has done, making corporations individuals, a response to attacking our electoral rights.
Well, Janice, this
That's
country
all
is
going on.
Janice, this country is damn near in total corporate checkmate. And it is
absolutely.
So close. They are so close to zipping up that body bag on this nation that if we falter, if somehow we cannot repel these people, these governors in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maine, if we lose this battle, it's checkmate. Game over.
Yep.
I don't know if anybody's been paying attention, but we just got our asses kicked. That's a line from Aliens. And I'll tell you like this. We can sit back and we can talk about a black response and the whole, it's not going to matter. Black people don't get up off their asses and get to the poll. If black people don't pay attention and get involved in the politics that is destroying their lives, if the poor black people who are recipients of these funds that are being cut don't come out outraged, and I understand their resources are very, very limited.
Yeah.
But you can.
Well, Brother O'Malley had some things to say about our anger.
Take it out on your wife, on your husband, on your brothers, your sisters, your neighbors, and what have you. Stay mad. That's why when the brother step on your shoe, you want to kill him, cut him, do something to him, and depart him. You know you do, on the one hand. But on the other hand, white people do stuff to you every day and do stuff to you that deserves a death penalty, and you don't even talk back to them, right? And so you have this displaced anger all the time. And the same thing was true with the Jews. Jews always upset. They say, well, Africans in this country got the highest rate of high blood pressure in the world. African men got the highest rate of prostate cancer than anybody on earth. And you don't know why. I know why. Because you got this repressed anger. You stay sick because you are so angry, and you can't do anything with this anger, because if you do, white power would drop down on you like a lead balloon, and you know it. And so you contain and hold your anger into yourself. Then you also a little disturbed, because white people have told you that if you want to succeed, in order to succeed in a white man's world, you got to act white. You don't feel white, and when you look in the mirror, you don't look white. But you got to do all those things to act white all the time. You got to learn perfect diction. You understand? In other words, you got to talk like white people. And you even have to learn how to walk like white people. When people talk about Michael Jackson, they say Michael Jackson did this terrible thing with children. And what I want to tell you, that something is wrong with Michael Jackson, but they got the wrong disease. If you want to look at child molestation, Michael Jackson is a victim of child molestation. When you see an African who is so messed up that he has internalized this whole concept of being white to succeed, that he mutilates himself to such an extent that he continues to mess up his face, that he looks like an old, sick white woman. This is somebody who is a victim of child molestation. Because you have to be like the oppressor, and so you're sick all the time. And you're angry with each other all the time. You're really angry with the white man, but you ain't gonna mess with him. Scared of him. You're scared of him. You're scared to even be seen places with black people that white people don't want you to be seen with. I ain't going there, because if the white man, if my boss, if somebody hears about it, I'm gonna be in trouble. The police might know it. The white man might know it. My boss might know it. Ain't that a hell of a way to live? That's how the Jews were living, too. And so they were always messing with each other. And so the Jews had what many people refer to as religion today. But it's not exactly religion. The reality is that every culture, every society has for itself an explanation of its place and destiny in the world. You won't find a society that cannot come up and has for itself. And this is an explanation that has come out of its own experiences as a people. Everybody does that. And the Jews had a way of life around which had emerged this thing, that this philosophy. And the philosophy, of course, is tied up into now what you call the Bible. And the Jews had certain leaders who best interpreted and best understood and best expressed the notions that was in this philosophy that was found in the Bible. These were the teachers. They were called priests and things like that. Now, I'm not talking, when you talk about religion, you're talking about what white folk have taught you is something that you go to do every Sunday in church, or in Bible study or something like that. I'm talking about a way of life. This is how the Jewish people, this is how all peoples emerged. They had a way of life. And philosophy grew out of this way of life and informed the people how they should act. For example, people would discover that eating the pig and stuff like that would kill you pretty soon. It would kill you sometimes, won't it? Because it has all these disease and tapeworms and all other kinds of things associated with it. So after the leaders of the society, the learned people in the society, begin to sum up that the thing would kill you, he will have a vision that will say, God said, don't eat anything with cloven feet. Won't it? Don't eat anything like that because it'll kill you. If I told you, you're going to eat it. Anyway, because I like them pork chops, you understand? But God told you not to eat food. Write that down. You understand? And so you see, coming out of the experiences of the people, this philosophy and some science and some mysticism, because the reality is much of religion and from our society is organized around ignorance, what you don't know. If you don't believe it, I can tell you the main thing that person who is very religious say to you when you say, I'm not religious. They say, what you mean, ain't no God? They won't give you evidence that there is. They can't say, well, if there ain't no God, then how the moon get there, and how the sun get there, and why it go round and round like it does. In other words, if you don't know the answer, it must be a God. So it's the religion organized around what? Ignorance. The more you know, the more you move away from. Oh, yes. And so here you have like 2,000 years ago, was no satellites, was no Toyotas, was no cable television, was no telephone, was no indoor toilets, except maybe in Egypt. Right? And 2,000 years, and the Roman kicking butt everywhere. Rome is doing it up. And the people who are oppressed by Rome want to find a way. And the Jews had this belief that someday there was going to come a leader, a deliverer. And deliverer, what is a deliverer? They call it a Messiah. That's what Messiah means. A deliverer, someone who would deliver us. Because the Jews wanted to have their own government. They didn't want to be governed by the Romans. They wanted to have their own government. In those days, you didn't have governments that were comprised of Congress and Senate and Parliament and stuff like that. In those days, you had governments where there were kings. Isn't that right? And in such a place where there are kings, you call it what? A kingdom, right? And so the Jews wanted their own kingdom. And they believed that there was going to be somebody who would come and lead them to find their own kingdom. Not after you die, but right here on earth. Right here on earth. They wanted a kingdom. They wanted to get out from under the domination of the white people from Rome. But there were all kinds of organizations among the Jews, just like there are organizations among you. There was one organization that was called the Sadducees. And this was an old Uncle Tom organization, comprised mostly of rich Jews. And they were religious, rich Jews, real, real rich Jews. Not just, and so just like now, back then you could still be under foreign domination and get rich. And then there were the Pharisees. The Pharisees were also Uncle Tom's satellite group, except the Sadducees were nonviolent. They were, some people call it pacifism, but I call it masochism. Okay. Right?
Okay. And
you see, I have the Bible up here.
For those of you who are just joining us, we've been listening to segments of three lectures by Omawale Yeshitela, who is the leader of the Uhuru movement. He is chairman and founder of the African People's Socialist Party and leader of the African Socialist International. And a side note, he is the founder of the Burning Spear newspaper. It's one of the oldest black newspapers in continuous publication since 1960. We're going to go to our phones. Thank you for being with us. 405, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Janice, and I'd like to say good evening
Don.
To Alpha, and good evening to the audience and whoever in the world is listening to this.
Oh, my brother.
I am also having a lot of trouble trying to stay in tune with the Google and with my search engines. But it seems like it always happens when truth is going forth and teaching is being brought and understanding is being had with reference to the subject matter that we're talking about tonight. And so I'm not surprised that that these airways have always gone down on us when subjects like these are talked about, because simply if people understand what's happening to us and what has happened to us, then we will rise, and the boot will be lifted off the back of our necks, and our backs will be straightened. So as Martin Luther Dr. King said, you can't ride a person whose back is not bent. And simply speaking tonight, Alpha has been on point. Everybody that I've heard on air has been on point. The gentleman who's bringing forth this message is very direct, but he is to the point. And we need to heed it and understand the dilemma that we find ourselves in, because when we are frustrated at the system, we take it out on our own people, and that has been passed down generationally, and it's no wonder that we have the high crime statistics, we have the high death rates, we have the worst health conditions in this country. And all of the we are the ones who are unemployed. We're dependent upon the good graces of these corporations and these employers to employ us for our very substance and existence. And so naturally, it frustrates our people, and it frustrates especially our children when they come up and they're exposed to information, and then they find out that they have so many obstacles before them, and that they're almost identified in grade levels 3 to 7 of being inmates, for the prison industrial complex. So nothing surprises me. This system has got us in a body bag, zipped. Not almost zipped up. And it's up to us to free ourselves from this situation. Because the system that of oppression that we live under in this country and that we're trying to hypocritically import to other countries under the theme of democracy is a lie. It's just a damn lie. And so in America, it's being seen. America cannot hide its dirty laundry. The world knows what's going on.
No, it cannot.
And you see, Janice, in these countries that we're trying to get a foothold and a toehold in, we're not welcome. We're
mm-hmm.
really not.
Mm-hmm.
We're not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And the NATO, the forces over there, they're not welcome. And they're going to have problems, and the president has a problem on his hand. Now, we have nothing to do but to support the man, because I'd rather have him than Palin or John or Clarence Thomas. And Clarence Thomas is supposed to be one of us, allegedly. But when we get educated, we feel that we turn our backs on our own out of frustration. This man is so ashamed of his race that he runs from it. And now he's sitting on the Supreme Court.
One of the things that has to be clear to us is that we have to resist. We can't go along to get along, because there's no payback in that. I mean, we see our president going along to get along, and he's neither getting along or getting any benefit from it. So I have to, as a resistor, as a warrior, which is why I wanted to bring in, and we're going to be hearing from Dr. Amos Wilson and Dr. Naeem Akbar and Reverend Jeremiah Wright as we move forward on the program tonight. But we have to be sure where we stand. We cannot afford to distort our realities in all of this.
Absolutely, Janice. And, you know, as I see it, when we went to school, we were taught to admire the courses in reference to his history that did nothing but just put us into a European mindset. We were taught Hebrew in the Bible, interpreted. We learned all of the history, which was their history, and it so ingrained us in their system that and we were so mistreated and so conditioned to the extent that we were afraid and still are afraid of this white dominated society that we are under.
Yeah.
And we have to overcome that, like you said. Now, I'm going to get off because I know there's somebody else who want to talk. But it's not dire because I'm not giving up. And so I plan on.
We just have to have a proper response to it all.
That's right. Exactly.
We need to study him
more than we study anybody else. Study his ways. Learn his weaknesses.
And now we need to study our ways.
Absolutely. That's called negritude. Negritude.
That's right.
And for people want to know, it's spelled N-E-G-R-I-T-U-D-E, which means awareness about one's own culture.
That's right.
Okay,
Don,
Janice, I'm going to get
off.
And let others get in, and I appreciate it, and we need to continue so that we can understand what has happened to us in order for us to free ourselves, fully free ourselves to the extent possible in this country and our children. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. And we're going to move on to listen to Dr. Amos Wilson. Dr. Amos Wilson used to be in the early days of Our Common Ground, one of our frequent guests, and we lost him maybe about 10 years ago. But listen to what he has to say, both about our need to be unwilling to be victims of white supremacy and to be anti-war extremists.
Today, you're talking about externalization, what we call it. When you make the recognition by other people your ultimate prize, when your status is dependent upon the adoration of outsiders, when your prestige is something handed to you by other people, then you are at their mercy. And we got too many people who think they are nothing until they're recognized by white folks.
Mm-hmm.
formed the crazy idea that black children could not love themselves and that black people could not love themselves until white people accepted them and loved them first. And you have to ask here, what if they never loved you? What if they never accept you? Are you going to spend then an eternity in self-hatred and self-abnegation? You cannot put your self-love and your social status and recognition in the hands of other people. You must become self-rewarding, and you must be the source of your own status and the source of your own prestige. Yes? You see, let others depend on you to confer prestige on them. Then that gives you power. Love, affection, and acceptance of others. We want to be loved by white folks. We got a lot of silliness right here now talking about racial harmony. And we got some joker running around here with some kind of Peace Corps or love or whatever it is. This is the other nonsense. You think that you're going to, you just sound like the flower children. You think you're going to send somebody around this city singing love, love, love and change the social realities in this world. Like those people in the city. I think we're going to hand flowers out and transform the world. You're out of your mind. Of a letter that I sent to the New York Times. Early in his administration, when the New York Times said that they're criticizing black people for in overplaying the thing, they tried to make it appear that the whole of the black community was boycotting the whole of the Korean community. These are just creating a total image. And I had to write them behind that, too. You know, so, you know, I don't know. How do you underestimate people's intelligence to such a degree? But the thing that made me most indignant was, who are you to sit in judgment of African people? You who are the inheritors of the death and total destruction of nature. Yes. The New York Times are the inheritors of the wealth from the murder and killing and enslavement of people. And you are going to sit in judgment because we boycott you Korean stores.
Right.
You're out of your mind. We will not let a bunch of murderers and killers set the moral line. These are the greatest criminals and insults to God on this globe today. And we dare listen to them as some kind of moral beacons in the world. Yes. Look at reality, deal with reality here. Okay, we'll have to go on to exercise power, then control must be exercised over the things that are valued in society. Power can rest on various power bases, but control of economic resources provides a continuous and important base of power in society.
Yes, sir.
And the other part of that letter I told Jenkins was this. You were talking about race harmony. There's not going to be any race harmony in this city, in this country, and in this world, as long as there is the economic imbalance between our people. It's not going to happen. No singing of love songs between races is going to be required. There has to be a change in the economic power of African people and other people. And I told the New York Times at that time, too, you want the black community to smile while it is being economically sodomized. It's not going to happen.
Right.
was using, if the Japanese took 95 cents out of every American dollar and shipped it to Japan. And yet that is what is happening to Africans and African Americans, who only spend a nickel out of every dollar with themselves. And get 95 cents out of every dollar that they make to another people. And we are supposed to be happy. And yet, old Thomas Bush, he has all kinds of conditions because of what? A trade imbalance. Because what? Too much money is leaving the United States and going to Japan and going to other nations. He knows that if this continues, the United States as a nation will deteriorate and fall into the dust. He knows that it will collapse in social and political chaos. You cannot unemploy a nation and a people. You cannot take out the nation's wealth and send it to other parts of the world. And it continues as a nation. Following in the shipment of wealth outside of a nation is economic, political, and social chaos and destruction. That is why in the end, when it comes down to the real cases, the United States will have to deliver a message to the Japanese just the way Kissinger delivered a message to the Arabs. We are not going to let you strangle us to death. And before we do that, we will end your life. This is the action of nations and people. You understand? You do not sacrifice your children. You do not sacrifice the social harmony of your neighborhoods in the name of any doggone principle to another people. That's right. I've told you before, a part of black-on-black violence is a result of the fact that the black community is subsidizing other people's families and children and denying its own.
You know, Alpha, and for those of you out there who are listening, it's really interesting that that presentation was made more than 10 years ago, before 9/11, before the Iraqi war, before we went into Afghanistan. That speech was before we admitted that Wall Street and the Federal Reserve and the corporations of America were offshoring our future. So it is not a way out for black people when we look at the issue of economic terrorism, political terrorism, racial terrorism, and cultural annihilation to say that we have not had thought leadership on these issues. Our number is 347-838-9852. We'll take your responses and your thoughts about what you are hearing. You're listening to Our Common Ground. We'll be right back.
I want to be free. I want you to be free. I want us to be a self-governing people, not actually having to ask the white man or anybody for anything. All normal, healthy human beings want to be self-governing and self-determining. I want to have a black power. I want to have a black government. When I say black power, I'm talking about black freedom. I'm talking about big lip freedom. I'm talking about broad nose freedom. I'm talking about nappy hair freedom. I'm talking about boom box on your shoulder freedom. I'm talking about black freedom, freedom on our own. We don't have to act like nobody else in order to be free.
I want to know why I'm fine 1 minute and the next my body aches so bad I can't move.
I want to know why my hair is falling out. I'm only 17.
I'm tired all the time. Now, this rash. I just want to know what's going on.
When you don't have the right answers, it may be time to ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The Black Voice Collaborative at TruthWorks Network. Tuesdays, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. Thursdays, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles. And on Friday, it's India Declare After Dark, Real, Raw, and Right Now. On Saturday, it's Just Damn Radio with Alpho of the Alpho Show. TruthWorks Network at Blog Talk Radio. It's the Black Voice Collaborative. For the TruthWorks programming schedule, go to truthworks.ning.com.
To Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, your host tonight, and we're talking about a time for self-examination, lessons from warriors of the Black Liberation Movement. Thank you so much for being with us here tonight at Our Common Ground. Alpho, we've had some changes at TruthWorks Network.
Yes.
We lost the very exciting India Declare After Dark show. India is just being overwhelmed with all of the things that she needs, all the projects regarding her broadcast company that she needs to take care of. And she thought it was going to be a whiz, just doing one nighttime show a week, and found that it was much too much for her, and we're sorry to have lost her at TruthWorks Network. But, of course, we've been working on it, and one of the things that we want to let you know is that on Monday, that will be the 28th of March, we're putting on a new project at TruthWorks Network, and that project is a rebroadcast of interviews from Blog Report with Minister of Information JR at the Block Report Radio. And he does some very exciting things, things that Alpho and Dr. D and Denise Bowles and I don't have the time to do. And the first reload, we're calling it Truth Reload, that we're going to be running on Monday night is an interview that he did with the author Ishmael Reed, and another interview that he did with a member of the Foreign Public Institute on Libya. And I think that those of you out there will enjoy that. That's at 10 p.m. on Monday night, TruthWorks Reload with the blog, the Block Report Radio. And we're excited about that next Saturday. Minister of Information, JR, from the Block Report of San Francisco Bay, will be joining us on this show to talk about the work that he's been doing. Thanks again for joining us. Our number is 347-838-9852. Now we're going to move on. We've heard from Brother Omali Yeshetela and Dr. Amos Wilson. Now I'd like to move into some lessons taught by one of my favorite people in all of the world who's having some difficulty with arthritis, I was told, Dr. Naeem Akbar. You can certainly, and we look forward to your responses to these lessons at 347-838-9852. Give us a call and let us and tell us what you're thinking about what our response should be.
Age in the fantasy of being Superman and Spider-Man and not have to color the pictures. To be able to buy a Band-Aid that is flesh-colored and not have to worry about it, stick it all on your flesh as Nellis does on his nose. The idea that some, you know who Nelly is, it's getting hot in here. But the idea to be able to comfortably let your children go to church and have images of the divine that look like them. To have your children learn the images of God and his mother and his companions and not have to alter the presentation and let the child feel included in the worship experience. That's privilege. It's privilege to somehow actually sit down from almost the day of birth and assume that the Son of God looks just like you. Pale skin, auburn hair, blue eyes, blowing in the wind, and therefore this person who is the Son of God is just like you. Not only is the Son of God just like you, his mother, wonderful virgin that she is, looks just like your daughter, your mama, your wife, your sisters, and all the other nice little white women in your world. And to not have to deal with the imposed suggestion that if the Son and Mother of God looks like this, where am I in the picture? To be able to go and to celebrate the Last Supper and to look at the 12 brothers sitting around the table and not one brother looks like a brother. I never could understand how they could actually throw a party with food and not even have the brothers bring in some wine or a piece of cornbread. Leonardo da Vinci, why couldn't you please just have a brother peeping around the curtain with a bottle of Chianti in a paper bag? Just that presence alone would have given me a sense of inclusion that permitted me to do otherwise. Images such as that permit people to grow up and feel confident in declaring who is the axis of evil and who is not. To feel comfortable in declaring their God-given right to do whatever they damn well please. The presumption of a deified possibility and a particular mission given by God only because they have the privilege of being white. If you are white, you have the privilege of not having to know W.E.B. Du Bois, to not be able to know Harriet Tubman, to not have to deal with the reality of knowing who Marcus Garvey was, to somehow think that Martin Luther King was only a dreaming person. To be able to believe that you are doing something worthwhile if you know who Booker T. Washington was on one day in February. To be white privilege is not having to worry about having images of Malcolm X in your home. Not having the presence of Mary McLeod Bethune as a way of instructing independence, autonomy. To not be able to engage in understanding Africa as the source and the foundation of civilized life on this planet. Being white permits you to talk about paranoia as a mental disorder and to not have to deal with the possibility that paranoia is an accurate assessment of reality. White privilege permit you to have a situational conscience that you can change the values whenever you please. Change the rules of the game when you find yourself losing the game. If you happen to be in Florida and find yourself losing the game, just go to Washington and ask some white man what to do, and they make your man the boss. You can win even after you've lost if you know how to change the rules. And the rules are changing all the time, and that's the consequence of white privilege. White privilege permits you to be uncritiqued. You can critique everybody on the planet, but no one has the right to critique you because you are the originator. You are the beginning. You are the only superpower. You are the privileged, the chosen one. And in doing so, there is nobody on the planet who has a right to critique you. White privilege taken to its logical conclusion gives us the activities of this day that began on March 17th and will continue to ends which we know not at this point. White privilege can permit you to say to the UN, you don't matter to me. I do what I damn please. How dare you question my right to do what I define as my priority? Even though the very existence of you as an institution is a consequence of my defining earlier rules and defining the form of the world should be, my presumption to decide what was a nation, who should be in the United Nations, and who should have the power to disagree and therefore veto the decisions of the operation. And as long as you operated with me and my sense of white privilege, you were a viable organization. But when you disagreed with me, I simply changed the rules and do just what I think. White privilege permits you to define crazy white people as an exception, and to claim that Trent Lott is not like most of us. He is an exception. He's a peculiarity. David Duke is a strange phenomenon. To somehow claim that these utterly bizarre people who often articulate the ideology that's being taught in all of the institutions of the white privileged environment are somehow viewed as being exceptions when they say what everybody else is thinking. That's a privilege that goes with being white. And you can then claim that the real white people are like me, one single individual slugging away at impossible realities, hated by my mama, hated by my father, hated by my boss, hated by my instructor, not having credibility in my own environment because I dare to raise questions about the contradiction of the very things they taught me. And to claim then that that's typical, when you know yourself, those of you who are here today, you know that you are strange white people. You are extraordinary white people. You are not typical white people. In fact, most white people would see you as being totally insane for even being present to listen to a crazy person like Naeem Akbar say what he's saying today. You know I'm telling the truth. But it's a privilege to somehow believe that this is the way we really are. This is the true American reality. No, 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 no. That's a privilege that you have to deny the fact that most of America is more like W than they are unlike W. And that's a painful truth, but that's the American way. That's white privilege. Now, leave white folks alone. There is another phenomenon. Paul helped me find this last night. It sort of came to me. I was hungry, and you notice I have a little trouble getting up here. I'm having some arthritic problems in my hip, and I don't feel like getting around very much. And so I wanted to eat. I always want to eat. That's why I know I'm still well. But I didn't want to go out. You see, it would be more like it if we, in fact, were able to choose freely whatever human being we wanted to marry. And I consider that to be a legitimate possibility and aspiration. And in civilized societies, I believe you can do that. But in a society like this, there is so much loaded meaning in the racial designation that no African American can choose a Euro-American without choosing the race primarily. I don't care what nobody says about love and all that other garbage. That's crap. You are choosing the image first because that's all that you've gotten in this society. You don't know nothing about white people. How you know? All you know is the image. You can't even, the realities that separate the races in this country are so rigorously defined that it would take you a lifetime to penetrate just the social distinctions to get to the real person. You all interact on the basis of your categories because that's what America has done for us. So the problem is this. My concern, you see, the problem is we've already gotten real mixed up physically, biologically, genetically. In fact, it's hard to find anything that even looks too much like a purebred African anymore among African Americans. I mean, just look around. I mean, the rapes that went on here for the last 400 years are well demonstrated. We are all, it doesn't take but a couple of steps in any of our family trees, and we find the slave masters, the slave breeders, the foremen, and all the rest of them. So the biological mixing has been going on a long time. But that's not my problem. The problem that I have is the fact that we run the risk of losing the integrity of a cultural identity that can save humanity. We have the cultural elements. We have the personal, historical human sensitivity and experiences, which can serve as a vehicle for bringing Americans back, bringing the world back to a human consciousness. And that's what I'm afraid that we are going to lose. So the complexion is not nearly a problem. Now, in terms of the local political situation, clearly, as I said a minute ago, that represents what I refer to as an alien self disorder. When one chooses someone other than oneself in a society where the choice has already been defined as not you, as opposed to your mama, as opposed to your sister, as opposed to anything that represents the best possibilities for yourself. When you consciously choose that, that's a choice of self-rejection. And I see that as being, I've written an article about it. I call that a mental disorder among African Americans. That's a mental problem. That's a very serious mental problem.
The government in this country said it was legal to hold Africans in slavery in perpetuity. Perpetuity is one of the University of Chicago words. That means forever. From now on. When Lincoln got in office, the government changed. Prior to the passing of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, the government defined Africans as slaves, as property. Property. People with no rights to be respected by any whites anywhere. The Supreme Court of the government, same court, granddaddy court of the one that stole the 2000 election, Supreme Court said in its Dred Scott decision in the 1850s, no African anywhere in this country has any rights that any white person has to respect at any place, anytime. That was the government's official position, backed up by the Supreme Court, that's the judiciary, backed up by the executive branch, that's the president, backed up by the legislative branch, and enforced by the military of the government. But I stopped by to tell you tonight that government changed. Prior to Harry Truman's government, the military in this country was segregated. But governments changed prior to the civil rights
and equal accommodations laws of the government in this country. There was back segregation by the country, legal discrimination by the government, prohibited blacks from voting by the government. You had to eat in separate places by the government. You had to sit in different places from white folks because the government said so. And you had to be buried in a separate cemetery. It was apartheid American style from the cradle to the grave, all because the government backed it up. But guess what? Governments changed. Under Bill Clinton, we got a messed up welfare to work bill. But under Clinton, blacks had an intelligent friend in the Oval Office. Oh, but governments changed. The election was stolen. We went from an intelligent friend to a dumb Dixiecrat, a rich Republican who has never held a job in his life, is against affirmative action, against education, I guess he is, against health care, against benefits for his own military, and gives tax breaks to the wealthiest contributors to his campaign. Governments change sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad. But I'm fitting to help you again. Turn back and say, he's fitting to help us again. Where governments change, write this down, Malachi 3:6. Malachi 3:6, thus saith the Lord. Repeat it after me, for I am the Lord, and I change not. That's the King James Version. The New Revised says, for I, the Lord, do not change. In other words, where governments change, God does not change. God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. That's what his name, I Am, means. You know, he does not change. There is no shadow of turning in God. One songwriter puts it this way, as thou hast been, thou forever will be. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord. Unto me, God does not change. God was against slavery on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still against slavery today. God was a God of love yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of love today. God was a God of justice on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of justice today. Turn to your neighbor and say, God does not change. Where governments lie, God does not lie. Where governments change, God does not change. And I'm through now. But let me leave you with one more thing. Governments fail. The government in this text, comprised of Caesar, Quirinius, Pontius Pilate, Pontius Pilate, the Roman government failed. The British government used to rule from east to west. The British government had a Union Jack. She colonized Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, and Hong Kong. Her navies ruled the seven seas all the way down to the tip of Argentina in the Falklands. But the British government failed. The Russian government failed. The Japanese government failed. The German government failed. And the United States of America government, when it came to treating her citizens of Indian descent fairly, she failed. She put them on reservations. When it came to treating her citizens of Japanese descent fairly, she failed. She put them in internment prison camps. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God
damn America that's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme. The United States government has failed the vast majority of her citizens of African descent.
And that was both Dr. Naeem Akbar and Dr. Reverend Jeremiah Wright, both ministers of the cloth, or and the only two preachers that I know that I would allow to my microphone, Alpha.
Janice, I got to tell you right now, I'm going to protest to this because that Muslim Obama sat in that Christian church for 20 years. And I got to tell you, you know, this has got to be one of the worst things. I am so appalled that that Muslim would sit in that Christian church all of those years.
Well,
is he a Muslim?
He was invisible because he doesn't have a proof of birth.
Well, Dennis, you know, and listening to both of those gentlemen, I didn't hear him lie one time. However,
that's right.
They're absolutely right. They are absolutely
and
right.
And we cannot say that we have not had thought leadership about how to respond to economic terrorism, political terrorism, racial terrorism. We cannot say that we do not know what our response should be to cultural annihilation and electoral elimination. We cannot say it.
Well, people are simply passionate about their day-to-day lives and in the rut that they're living or existing in. People are passionate about and so afraid that they can lose their job that they can't even get to a poll to vote. People are so passionate about all of the things that really don't matter and simply going day-to-day, some type of depraved indifference to facts. Some of this depraved indifference to their reality as it sits in the political arena. Reverend Wright was spot on. This nation had, he's right, goddamn America. And for them to take that out of context the way they did simply, exemplifies the racism that is so entrenched in within the right-wing Republicans of this nation and Democrats. Now, this is where I can say they are the same, different sides of the same coin. But when it comes right down to it, when you get right down to that part where somehow someone is supposed to tell the truth, they can never.
Well, you know, all of these teachers, and we won't have time to go because I put together a series after a lecture that Dr. Joy DeGry, who is the author of Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, where people were asking her questions, not about what our response should be to the contemporary attacks on America, on America's democracy, and on black people specifically, because you know, I think part of it is that for some of us, this simply has not knocked on the door yet. And I don't think people who haven't lost their jobs, people who haven't lost their homes, people who are struggling, but they're struggling from one paycheck to another, or every two paychecks to every two paychecks, or however it's done, that what is happening in this country has not knocked on their doors yet. The other thing, Alpha, is that when I ask the question, are we doing the self-examination? And I ask it for a very specific reason, and that is something that Don pointed out, that we cannot see these things through Eurocentric lenses. We have to see it through the reality of our own lives. And if we think, if anyone out there thinks, because you've got a job, this is going to hit you differently than the people who don't have a job, or that because you have money in the bank, it's going to hit you differently than the recipient that lives down the street from you who depends upon a Social Security check or a so-called welfare check or food stamps. You're living outside of reality, and you ought to write the screenplay for Inception. Two. It is just not going to be different. Take a listen to what Terry Williams has to say to in response to what you've said, Alpho, about we're preoccupied with something else. I don't think we are. I think we're confused about our current response because we haven't formulated a new response.
Black people in this country have a whole other set of circumstances that impact on our pain. We either internalize it and we have major illnesses, hypertension, heart disease, cancer, or it comes out. We'll self-medicate with drugs, alcohol, food, and sex, gambling, working 24/7, and the hurting and the killing each other.
Now, haven't we already seen all of that? We have been experiencing that for the past 15 years. The past 15 years. Alpha, we could talk about this forever and a day. But until people start asking, who am I in the face of this kind of attack? What does it mean that we are being culturally wiped out, we're becoming an invisible people? Alpha, thank you so much for being with us. Don, thank you for your call. We've got to get out of here. We hope that you'll join us for the Block Report Radio at TruthWorks Network on Monday night, Tuesday night, A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah, and Thursday night, 8 p.m., Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles, and, of course, next Saturday afternoon at 3 p.m., Just Damn Radio at the Alpho Show. Alpho, thanks a lot. Everybody in the chat room, thanks so much for being with us, and we'll see you next Saturday.
Black people in this country have a whole other set of circumstances that impact on our pain. We either internalize it and we have major illnesses, hypertension, heart disease, cancer, or it comes out. We'll self-medicate with drugs, alcohol, food, and sex, gambling, working 24/7, and the hurting and the killing each other.
Thank you so much for being with us here at Our Common Ground. We hope you'll join us each Saturday evening at 10 p.m. to speak truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground, transforming truth to power, one broadcast at a time.
Common Ground, Saturday night, open mic. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Something inside me just won't let me. Something inside me, Lord, just won't let me. My baby's gone. Something inside me, Lord.